I mentioned yesterday that I'm a systems builder, but I would like to have analysis and theory help me in building my systems. But it's pretty complicated. And what I would like to talk about today is the view that we have to start right from the beginning, where you identify your requirements, then you do initial design to get a sense of what the system would look like, and you would refine your design to when you start making decisions, and along the way, you want to do analysis in all of this. Then you have to program the system, debug it, deploy it, validate it, and even after that, and it's running, you have to continuously validate it over its lifetime. And so what I want to talk about today, I have a couple main themes. So what I want to stress is, first, we do need to develop mathematical techniques for helping us approximate the system design early. And once we have this, we probably have to do this initially with very few assumptions. Then we would proceed with, we do the analysis iteratively as we make the specific choices. So for example, initially we may want to design a system and we need to know how many nodes, what the density is, what the rough communication bandwidth might be. But we don't know the routing algorithm. Then we get some sense of the size of the system and the parameters, then we end up picking a routing algorithm. We have to redo the analysis to see if it's still going to do what we want as a function of the specific routing protocol. And both of these levels can be highly mathematical. In addition, all phases need analysis, and some of them are not as mathematical. But we need also, as a fourth theme, is that once we start developing all these techniques, why can't we just collect them into a tool? So we have a system, a sensor network design tool that helps us not only do analysis at all these stages, but act as a repository for the analysis and for the decision making we're doing, and as we get more information, it feeds back into the analysis. So we're trying to build a tool like that and develop some kinds of analysis, and as we, as a field, progress and more interesting analysis comes, that should just plug into the tool. Right. To kind of motivate the couple of pieces of analysis that I'd like to show, I want to describe briefly our application we built. So we built a system called VisionLand PowerWare Surveillance. It had these are XSM modes here built by Crespo, and on here every node had one acoustic sensor, magnetometer, and four motion sensors. And we had a system built with over 200 of these systems described in this paper here. The kind of operational scenario, which will motivate some of these analysis techniques I'll describe, looks something like this. The idea is we want to deploy a system in a remote region. We want to do surveillance, target tracking, classification of the targets, and activating even remote sensors and exfiltrating information through satellites. So the notion is you have, in the dead of night, the soldiers go in and they put in some powerful sensor and or communicating device that can reach satellites, and maybe their infrared sensors are really powerful acoustic sensors that can see what's going on down here in the valley, this, say, remote region that's of interest. Then unmanned air vehicle deploys a sensor network, and the sensor network has to meet certain requirements, like has to live 6 months, has to have full sensing coverage, it has to detect the targets, it has to activate the cameras that are back here when a target appears in the system. Now, when you have those requirements, you say, well, what do I need? How many nodes do I need? What communication bandwidth? What density? What sensing range? And you have no idea. So we did it all by trial and error, but that's not the right way you want to do it. So you want to develop good mathematical techniques to help you. So imagine that after you do some analysis like that and you get a rough idea of how many nodes you need, to meet the lifetime requirements, you might have to put some to sleep and some awake. And so these red ones are sentries, we call them. They're going to stay awake. The other ones are going to go to sleep until something interesting happens. And then these can rotate over time. And then you say, well, once you pick that scheme, now you want to reanalyze the system to see if you're going to meet your deadlines, your lifetime. The system has to self-organize, and after it self-organizes, it chooses this some of these nodes become sentries. When a target arrives, other nodes are awakened because the sentry nodes aren't powerful enough to really detect, classify, and track, but you get a set of nodes. So you activate these, and you activate nodes along the communication path, and you activate this remote sensor, and you send the data out for satellites. Yeah, you have a question?
Do you have a flat network or instead of
a... This is a flat network. All of these nodes are equivalent, and this node is kind of a base station. So this is flat. All right, so once the system might look like that, you might find that you're still not meeting your requirements for a lifetime. So you may have to come up with more interesting, aggressive power management schemes, including we came up with where we say tripwire, where this is just a representative example where you can divide your system into regions. Each of these rectangles is a region. And then each region is independently scheduled to be awake or asleep. And within each region, like this active region, the dark nodes are the sentries, the other ones are asleep. In a dormant region, they're all asleep. Now you have some trade-offs with your detection probability and so on, but you maybe decided that in order to meet the lifetime requirement, that you're not going to have as much probability of detection. So if a target came through here, you wouldn't see it while this schedule is being activated. On the other hand, the schedule can rotate and you can show you're meeting your timing requirements, lifetime requirements. And the idea then is, you know, you would need more analysis. If you still don't meet your deadline, lifetime requirements, I keep saying deadline, if you still don't meet your lifetime requirements, perhaps you even more aggressively pick what's called a duty cycle. So the sentries could also go to sleep here and wake up. So if you have a period of time, T, and call that 1 second, and a node sleeps for a portion of it and wakes up the other portion, that's its duty cycle. And so if I look at just one of those areas I was showing and consider that this area, and consider all these red nodes, the sentries that somehow were computed by our algorithm, and all the white ones are asleep. And so at some point in time T, this is the network, and all the red ones are the sentries. Now, if they were on 100% of the time, when a target came through here, this one should see it. But now imagine that the sentry itself sleeps, wakes up, sleeps. And so this is the period, and it randomly wakes up and sleeps in this period, and all of the sentries choose this independently. So you don't need a global coordination. And what we'd like to do is choose the right sleep cycle to meet, say, the probability of detection of 99%, or the delay before which you detect a target less than 1 second. Those are the kinds of requirements that you'd want to meet. So you want analysis that looks like that, supports that. Just quickly, a lot of the analysis is really helpful, but it's still not complete. And it's still a long way from really building the system. For example, in the system, we had over 30 services, and it ran on multiple different platforms, and it activated remote cameras. And this set of code that has to all work together has many, many parameters. And what you like is a good analysis for most of them to give you a sense of what that parameter setting should be. Otherwise, you do it in an ad hoc fashion. You just keep trying various combinations of parameters, and that's not a scientific way of doing it. Okay, so by the way, this system was deployed and transferred over to the military, and they're building it for real. In the life cycle, so I've already mentioned these, and the idea that today what I want to talk about is the analytical ones here, and also something down here we call replay. I won't have time to talk about all of this. But the idea, though, is that in the design time, you kind of have to iterate here, because initially you start out with really knowing very little, and then you want to keep refining it as much as possible. And then once you do something like you actually build the code and you start running it, you can feed back realistic numbers into some of the previous analysis and redo it, and so on. All right. Is there another question back there? Yeah.
You were saying that you need to change the parameters.
Well, particular, say, maximized lifetime. Or a lot of times it isn't maximized, but just meet a requirement. Meet a 6-month lifetime requirement and meet a detection probability. Yeah. Yeah, those are very important problems too. But you know, I think there's a vast number of things you have to worry about, and it's not easy to have one mathematical, say, model that covers all of it. But if you need that kind of trade-off, then yes, you would like to develop some analysis along those lines. But that's definitely a very critical issue. So what we've been doing is building this tool called Andes to try to act as this repository, and as we build these different analysis techniques at all these levels, we incorporate them into the tool. And today I'll briefly talk about some early analysis and something that is talking, tracking, and communication scheduling, and also say a little bit about this notion of replay that I mentioned. And we didn't start this tool from scratch, though. We're building upon this AADL tool, which is a well-known tool for embedded systems. So we can get a lot of other work done without having to recreate it. And this tool is extensible and allows you to plug in analysis. So as we develop good mathematical techniques, we just have to encode them into a scheme where you can just plug it into the overarching tool. So what we'd like to do is start with saying there's certain performance attributes that are typical for sensor networks, like lifetime, sensing coverage, communication capacity. Others like reliability, quality of service, security, and even others. These are really hard. We haven't addressed them yet. We're starting with the first three. And then given those three kind of requirements, then we have these kinds of parameters that we want to use in order to trade off among them to meet those requirements, including number of nodes, density, duty cycle, and so on. So let me briefly start with an analysis example for tracking. If I have a network out here laid out like this, and a target comes through the network, maybe in that direction, it's coming through a shorter path in the network, a longer path in the network. Now the analysis is going to have to make simplifying assumptions. Like, for example, initially targets go in straight lines at constant velocity. And we know that isn't completely true. Targets can stop, they can move, they can go in non-straight paths. But even having some notion of what the targets might do and what you need for even this case gives you an idea of how to build your system. So the idea is, in this case, we want to meet a certain probability of detection. We want an average detection delay no greater than a certain amount of time, because we need to activate this remote camera, and the camera then has to take pictures and some startup time. And if we take too long, the target's gone. And we're going to choose, you know, these kinds of parameters again. And this is going to be a function of the path length L that the target's in the field and its different speeds. So just as an idea of the analysis is that if you have a node that has a sensing range and a target comes through here, it can come through at any portion of this sensor's range. So you consider, say, L as the segment of time, segment length that it is in that sensing range. And if the velocity of the target is V, then L over V is the amount of time it's in that sensor's purview. And then the period that the sensor is going to sleep and wake up, the period is T, but the duty cycle is beta. So beta T is how much I'm going to be awake. So basically, if I'm awake while it's in there, then I see it. If I'm not awake, I don't see it. And then what I can do is I have to consider all possible locations, and I kind of have to integrate this over to the target locus, and we end up with, I'm not going to go through the derivation, but we end up with the probability of detection for targets where this is the duty cycle, beta, this is the radius, this is the velocity, and this is the period. So it's a function of all these nice parameters, and you can trade them off against each other in making your decisions. So for example, and then we also derive formulas for detection delay. And it turns out that You need different formulas whether the target's fast or slow. And fast and slow has a very formal definition, but I won't really have time to go into it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's probability of detection.
Right.
Doesn't beta go to beta possibly go to one?
Yes.
So then you have probability of detection greater than 1S. Alright, I'll ask you.
There may be some assumptions here that I'm not mentioning.
Okay. Sorry.
And so we have these other formulas, and the point is these formulas then can be encoded and placed in the tube. And then when you're designing your system, you can use them to come up with trade-offs. And so, for example, if you look at this chart, this is the duty cycle. Assuming a 1 second period T, you can use the formulas to compute. This is the duty cycle, what percentage of time that you're going to be awake. So say 40% of the time the node is awake. And then each curve is for the different velocities, how fast the targets are going. And then this axis is the expected delay. So if your requirement is that you only have to worry, say your expected delay should be 1.3 seconds, then basically you're able to get away with meeting this by using almost a zero duty cycle. It's actually 1 millisecond. So, and that's kind of the minimum duty cycle. So you only have to be awake 1 millisecond out of every second. Because you only wait 1 millisecond out of every second, you're going to save the most energy. Now, if it turns out your requirement is you need a 0.4 second expected delay, and you have targets, say, of 35 meters per second, then you have to be, your duty cycle has to be almost, say, 50 meters.
So there's no observation noise. This is all.
This is all
the randomness is different.
That's right. But the point is, if you can develop better formulas for us that include noise and these things, then they can be enhanced and put in the models, and we have a better analysis.
What's the cost of turning these things on and off, or waking them up and putting them to sleep? Can you do it as much or as often as you want, and that's going to basically, there's no extra turning on kind of expenditure cost?
Oh, there is, but that can be accounted for.
Okay.
It's not, first of all, there are two things. One is the turning on and off. Yes, there is a spike of energy for that, but that you can take into account in your lifetime calculation.
Right.
Okay. And then there's a little bit of when you turn on, some sensors require some warm-up time, I'll call it.
Right.
And others don't, and that also would have to be taken into account.
Okay, that can all be.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed it. Are you counting the routing or propagation delay in the expected delay computation? I'm not at this stage.
Let me see, in this part, let me think about the answer to that. I think that, again, certainly the tool and the use of the analysis, all the assumptions that you're making that underlie it have to be clear, okay? And so I just blanking on whether or not communication delays and the routing is there. But generally, you would start with trying to do this for any routing protocol. Like that's the highest level analysis. Then the next step I'll show is when you say, let's go, and now we pick something, we have to do a next level analysis. Then you also, we validated this with simulation, and so really sensing ranges look more like that and not circular. And we basically computed, we ran 10,000 targets through the area and defined a CDF for it, how much time the delay of detection was, say, less than a tenth of a second. And the solid lines, the analytical models, and the dots and diamonds and so on are the simulation results. And again, what we'd like is that the tool gives you an information about the utility of this mathematical model, whether it was validated or how it was used, and all the assumptions. So that should be part of it, so you know what you're using, basically. So then the next step was to try to as you're designing, you might make some choices and everything, and then you also worry about communication. And in the next level, you might come up with a problem like, I need to do end-to-end flows, and when I detect things, I need to get the messages out and activate that camera in time so I have some real-time deadlines to get there. And I wanted to try to analyze, is my system capable of doing that? And so the answer will certainly be a function of bandwidth, the deadlines, how tight they are, the periods, the workloads, and other things like distance it has to travel. And any solutions I make, I also would like to understand the impact on lifetime. So for example, in this case, it's hard to do something precise, but you would start with what are expected workloads. And so for example, imagine my network looked like this, and I had some activity happened here, and then there's a communication of packets having to go out through this path. Some other thing happened here, and third here. So imagine there's three simultaneous targets in the system. They each cause streams, and they all have to communicate. And they may have different requirements. So for example, the red stream might have a message size of 2,000 bits and a certain period and a certain deadline, and so on. And so if you were to say that I want to design my system for handling up to three targets, and you respect the certain kinds of requirements like that, then is the system, the way I laid it out with particular routing, actually going to be able to handle it? And what's important to deal with is the interference range. So for example, when this stream is going through here, and the green stream, there's going to be interference in this region. And over here is interference. So that's going to impact the timing. Then what we do is we develop some analysis where the analysis definitely includes the impact of interference, the timing constraints, and the multi-hop. It does make assumptions like there is no collisions at the MAC layer, it's fixed routing, communication and interference range are known, and there's no transmission failure. Initially, if that analysis gives you an idea that the system you design is likely to meet your requirements, you have some confidence under very ideal conditions. Then you start to change the conditions, you can refine that analysis as well. The analysis, I'll briefly say, looks like it's analogous to what we do in real-time scheduling theory called exact characterization. And first we have prioritized the streams based on the concept of velocity. So velocity is if you have a distance to travel and a deadline, you take the distance divided by the deadline, and if your packets transmit that constant velocity, it'll make its deadline. And so the streams, some have to go a short way, some have to go a long way, the deadlines are all different. So you can prioritize based on highest velocity requirement first. And essentially what you do is you schedule stream one in the system, then two, then three, and you keep scheduling them until you either schedule them all or you show that you can't do it. And you can make an analogy to kind of the cylinder packing. So if I show these three streams again over here, A, B, and C, and if you look at this diagram, the x-axis is space, and the y is time. So for example, this stream here, what it's saying is, when I send a packet, it kind of consumes this much space. That's its interference range. And it does that for this length of time here. That's one hop. Then it's the next hop, it's going here, third hop, and so on. Then when it gets in this range, it has to wait because other packets from other streams are going through, and so on. And this green, light green, this could be the deadline of the green packet. So this one is higher than this. So that if I schedule it through this way, this one made its deadline, the purple one made its deadline, and the blue one made its deadline. And so then you say, okay, all of these three. Now, to actually implement that, you can use a kind of a table-like approach. And in the table, the links, every link in the system is represented in the here along here, and the time slots here, and if I have just these two streams, this stream is going to go through, since say it has the highest velocity requirements, I might schedule this link in the first time slot, then this link, and this link, and this link, then I try to put the second stream in, but the second stream can't start here because it would be interfered with, depending on your interference model. The interference model is easily represented by a matrix, and you might start initially with this matrix being, say, assume that the interference is two hops. Now, once you do that analysis and you get a sense your system works and you go to the field, you try it, and you find out you could actually go out and measure your interference ranges. Instead of using a uniform, ideal two-hop interference range, you could see what it really is and then just encode that in this matrix and then repeat the analysis. And so that interference matrix can be very general. The last point I wanted to make was that if you jump ahead to, you built your system now and you want to use it, before you use it, you better go test it in the real world. And you're going to test it in a similar scenario. So imagine we have a friendly area where we put the nodes out, we're going to run a tank through it. And we run the tank through, and we do some testing, and we find there's a bug. And then we fix it. Then we run the tank through, and we say, all right, it didn't happen again, but did we really fix the bug? You know, the sensors are different, the day, time of day is different, the noise is different. So you can't repeat, and it's a very serious problem. So we built a system called EnviroLog, which has a recording stage where, let me just get all of the animation here. The input comes in, normally it goes into modules that get processed, they go into other modules that are trying to understand the sensor values, and then you produce some output. If we log any target modules that we happen to be interested in, we find the nodes that provide data to those modules, and we log them. And then while the system is running, like the tank is running through the system's operating, but it's also logging things to the flash with timestamps. And then we can replay the thing over and over again with the same pattern, the same sensor values, the same timing, everything coming from the flash instead of the real system. And there's many, many advantages of this in that, first of all, you can do, for example, take a suite of tests, put a tank through, put a car through, put people with weapons through, and take all of those as a suite. Then you can keep developing your system and analyzing different protocols and changing things and still rerunning things without having to physically do it. Really useful, like for debugging, like I just explained, but also even protocol comparison in real settings. Suppose I have two protocols and I want to see which is better. And I want to try it really for real. If I put protocol one in my system and I run it and I get some performance, I put protocol two and I get a different performance, how do I know why I got the difference? But if I have the same inputs, then I can carefully decide why the difference was there. And same thing with parameter tuning. You can even do wider tests in that you can virtually speed up the target. If the target, the tank drove through at 20 miles an hour, then by tricks, you can just provide all the sensor data faster and make it look like it went 40 miles an hour. And it's very valuable, especially for unsafe or hard to produce events. Like suppose you had to detect explosions. You don't want to keep having to explode things over and over. So basically, I think the field is very, very early, and we're starting to see these kinds of mathematical analysis results, and it'd be nice to know, which ones are most useful and helpful, and as we find those, there should be a way to integrate them into nice design tools. And while I didn't talk about this, you do also have other benefits by using tools like AADL, where you can help define the components of the system and integrate them and do other kinds of analysis, like are you going to fit in memory, are you going to meet your timing constraints locally, and so on. And so I was hoping to find here nice results, which we could ask people, oh, why don't you just program up your result, and then we would be able to add it to our toolkit. And I still would like to see that. And let me just mention, there are a lot of parts I've talked about, and these are kind of the main people who are working on those areas.